Good evening, and welcome to this evening's meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California. I am Karen Kiefer, a member of the International Relations Member-Led Forum, and your chair of this evening's program. Welcome also to NORCAL Peace Corps Association, our partners in tonight's program. We also welcome our listeners on the radio, and we invite our audience to visit us online at www.commonwealthclub.org. And now it is my pleasure to introduce our distinguished speaker this evening. Charles Frankel is the honorary consul for the Republic of Botswana. How many of you know where Botswana is? Aha, okay, you've done your homework. He was first appointed in 1981 after serving as Botswana country director for the Peace Corps from 1973 to 1975. Chuck has extensive experience as an entrepreneur and manager in private, public, and nonprofit enterprises, as well as in community development. He's currently a principal in Interim Museum Services, which provides interim directors to museums. Consul Frankel has served as officer or director of many nonprofit organizations in international affairs and development, art, social sciences, education, music, and health. A true Renaissance man. He currently serves on boards of the World Affairs Council of Northern California, the National Peace Corps Association, and the Goldman School of Public Policy at the University of California. He's also a member of the Bretton Woods Committee and the Pacific Council for International Policy. And now, Consul Frankel will tell us how Botswana has become such a success story in Africa. Consul Frankel.
Thank you very much, Karen. Karen Kiefer was nice enough to invite me about 6 months ago, and at that point, I was absolutely sure that Botswana was a success story. 6 months have gone by, and now you'll be the judge as we talk through the country today. You saw a little bit of our problem up here. When we lived in Africa, we had an expression called wawa. Whenever you thought everything was going right, suddenly something would fall apart, and we would say, West Africa wins again. And that was the story tonight. We really thought everything was perfect until a few minutes before showtime. Last night, I happened to be reading Ted Sorensen's new book, and he tells Ted Sorensen, as many of you know, was famous because he wrote many of the speeches for John F. Kennedy when he was both senator and president. And I noticed that he suggested that when you write a speech, it should be short, you should use many quotations, you should use jokes throughout the speech, and there should be various sentences that rhyme with each other. And as I read this, I thought, we're in for a very bad night tonight. I do want to say thanks to NORCAL for being here, NORCAL Peace Corps. I wouldn't be here tonight if my family and I had not, in 1973, gone to Botswana, where I was Peace Corps director, lived for the next two-plus years there, and gotten so much out of it that I wanted to be related to Botswana ever since. And I've stayed involved because I've been the honorary consul, as you heard, since 1981. Botswana has had a Peace Corps there every year since, I think, 1968, maybe it was 66 at independence. And they've missed just a few years when the U.S. withdrew its Peace Corps. Botswana wanted it back, and it's now back. So those of you who have come for a story of Africa because you've heard so much about Africa may have been interested in stories of armed conflict or abusive regimes, drought or hunger or corruption. And I'm going to disappoint you because that isn't our story tonight. It's the story of Botswana, which I think is a success story. I'm going to tell you the background of the country, how it developed and how far it has come, why it has developed as well as it has, what hasn't gone well that we thought might, and the current situation as it faces, as we do, a recession. Botswana is a landlocked country. It's surrounded by South Africa, Zimbabwe, Zambia, Angola, and Namibia. And it's also very close to Malawi. And as a result of being landlocked, there are really very few things that it can export, so keep that in mind. It has to go through other countries to export anything that is heavy or large. And its size, you can't tell by that, but it's about the size of Texas or the country of France. That's pretty big. Its population when we were there was about 750,000. Today it's about 1.8 million. Its major part of the country is the Kalahari Desert, and this is a baobab tree in the Kalahari Desert. The Kalahari makes up a very significant portion, 70% of the landmass of the country. However, it also has the Okavango River that flows down periodically, seasonally, from Angola, and that enriches the country. It allows the tremendous numbers of bird species that exist in the Okavango as well as the wild animals. Its water, therefore, is up. This Okavango Delta is up in the northwest, and all the people are down in the southeast. So there's a little bit of a problem. There's the Kalahari Desert in between. Botswana was not always Botswana. It started out as the Bechuanaland Protectorate. In 1885, chiefs from the country went to Great Britain and requested that the Queen protect their country against the Boers who were waging war and taking more land. And the English accepted Botswana. And from 1885 on, Botswana was a protectorate. Its capital was, in fact, outside of the country, rather unusual thing, but the capital was just over the border in South Africa in a town called Mafeking. And in the 1950s, let's jump forward about 65 years and skip a little history, but in the 1950s, the paramount chief of the largest tribe of the country, the Bamangwato tribe, the paramount chief, Seretse Khama, had gone to England and Oxford and decided to marry an English woman, a woman named Ruth Williams. And these are some of the pictures of Bechuanaland in that intervening period. There were battles between the Boers and the English. These are some of the chiefs. And this is Seretse Khama and his bride, whom he married in 1948. It wasn't a happy marriage in the eyes of either the South Africans or the British. Winston Churchill decreed that he should remain in England in exile permanently. And it was only when a Labour government came into office in Great Britain that the country was willing to have Seretse Khama return to Botswana. And in 1963, he returned, and he returned as the paramount chief because a number of the chiefs in Botswana had come and petitioned the Queen, asking that Seretse come back as the paramount chief. Botswana's economy at that time was dependent on beef exports. They had significant hoof and mouth disease, Its main income source was remittances from the people who lived in Botswana, the Botswana, who were male miners, and they were working in apartheid South Africa. They sent money back to Bechuanaland. In the 1960s in Africa, country after country received its independence from England or France or Germany, and in 1966 it was the turn for Bechuanaland to become independent. The Tswana people were going to be independent. And they created a flag, a national anthem, a constitution, all the trappings of a new country. At that point, they had 8 miles of paved roads. There were no government schools or hospitals, although there were three private schools. The gross, the GDP was the poorest in, it wasn't the poorest in the world, it was in the 10% poorest nations of the world, the least developed countries, according to the United Nations. And early surveys predicted Botswana, which was the name that they selected, Botswana would require external budget support forever. Botswana is the country of the Tswana. Khama, that is, Seretse Khama, became president, and there were about 10 college graduates in the country at that time, 1966. Botswana was said to have had more cattle than people. Its capital was Gaborone, a brand new location. It was then a very small village. They built a dam so that there would be water, and they anticipated a maximum of 8,500 people would inhabit that area. Botswana was fortunate in that it had had in its history what they call khotlas. These are ways in which the people in the village make decisions by meeting, and it's not very different from a Quaker meeting. They come to a decision by talking things out together, and they reach a decision. So they had the Khotla tradition as they formed the new government, and they created a multi-party democracy. They also created a flag, which, well, there's the flag. Sorry, that wasn't the flag. And their flag was created. The blue represented water, which was so important to a country which had so much desert. And the black and white represented the fact that it was a multiracial democracy. The vice president of the country was another Oxford graduate named Kwet Masiri, who would subsequently become the second president. There was a legislature created with two houses, the National Assembly and the House of Chiefs, and an independent judiciary. By 1972, which was a year before our arrival, and that was just 6 years after independence, Botswana already had a balanced budget. That means that they were able to raise revenues to support their operating budget, but they still did receive money for many years on their development, for their development projects. So jump forward, if you would, with me, and you will see that in her confirmation hearings, Senator Hillary Clinton last month responded to Maryland Senator Benjamin Cardin in a question about aid recipients' use of their mineral wealth. And she said, quote, "We should look at the models of countries that have handled their mineral wealth to the advantage of their people. Botswana comes to mind. They've been very good stewards of their diamonds and have invested in roads and school and infrastructure." So 44 years have gone by since independence. What happened in the interim? Why did Hillary Clinton cite Botswana as the leading example of effective use of a country's resources? Seretse Khama encouraged mineral exploration, and the result was that many companies throughout the world were invited in and were successful. They found diamonds, copper, nickel, coal, soda ash, and coal, and cobalt. And one of the largest successful operations is that with De Beers. De Beers in Botswana formed a 50% partnership, so that De Beers brought all of the expertise and the marketing, and Botswana provided the resources and gradually has taken over the leadership, the management of the mines in Botswana. One of those mines, by the way, is Xuaning. It's the world's largest and richest diamond mine. It's one of three diamond pipes being mined. Another is Orapa. These are not the kind of diamond mines that you've seen in Blood Diamonds. As you will note, it's an open pit mine. These are huge operations in towns that have been completely closed off, and you need passes to come in or out. Video cameras are everywhere. Botswana is the largest producer of diamonds in the world by value. 29% of the world's of the value of diamonds in the world comes from Botswana, and that's opposed to South Africa with 15% and Russia with 19%. Botswana produces 30 million carats a year. And the good news is that that produces 85% of Botswana's foreign exchange, 65% of the government revenue, and a third of the gross domestic product. You can see that some of the vehicles that are used dwarf men, and these transport the rock that is blasted out, which carries the diamonds. Gaborone became the capital in 1966. I told you that they expected about 8,500 people would ultimately live in that town. But today, there are more than 200,000 who live there. And Botswana has tall buildings. It has shopping centers. Economic growth over the period from 1966 to 1997, over the 30-year period, made Botswana the fastest-growing economy in the world. Hard to believe. You probably hadn't heard that before. And it continued to grow at about 6% between 1998 and 2008. Its per capita income rose, as you note, from $80 per capita in 1966 to almost $9,000 last year. Botswana, along with China, Thailand, and Oman, had the highest growth rate during that 30-year period. In 1966, the government of Botswana started a national development plan process. It would be a six-year projection of what Botswana is going to do over the next 6 years. And it had, it was a plan from the bottom up where people would start discussing it in the village kotlas. It would work its way up to the district level and finally end up in the National Assembly. It set the government's priorities for the plan period, the policies, programs, and projects, as well as time schedules, milestones, and costs. I suppose it would be outrageous to suggest it would be interesting to have our government do something like that, but that's all right. Tourism at that time was second. Tourism really starting in the early 70s became second only to minerals as an income producer, with hundreds of lodges and permanent tented camps in game parks throughout the country. 20% of the country is set aside as game preserve. I'm sure you've heard of the Okavango Delta, Chobe Game Park, or perhaps Murrayme, or the Kalahari Game Preserve. They are the premier destinations for safari in Africa. The tented camps are luxurious and comfortable. The animals and birds are plentiful and accessible. The staff is knowledgeable and friendly. I could go on and on, but that's a different lecture. There were 8 miles of roads, as I mentioned to you, at the time of independence. And that's now been turned into 4,000 miles of paved roads in Botswana. It's the highest miles of paved roads per capita of any nation. And it's also, unfortunately, the highest death toll in the world per 100,000 people. Agriculture constituted 40% of the GDP in the 1960s, and it's now only 3%. Cattle raising, which was once the main source of funds, is now the third most important sector after minerals and tourism. The beef that is produced by Botswana is sold throughout the world, but primarily in the European Union. There's been a steady reduction of poverty, which is estimated to have been in 1986, 59%, and in 2008, 23%. Botswana has earned the highest credit rating in Africa, an A grade from both Moody's and Standard & Poor's, and it has stockpiled foreign exchange reserves over $6 million, amounting to almost 3 years of current imports. It's one of the highest per capita foreign exchange reserves in the world. Botswana has consistently been ranked as the least corrupt country in Africa. Now, you may say that's not a big deal. It's the 36th in the world. Now, you may not say that's a big deal, but it is ahead of 9 European Union countries. The World Economic Forum rates Botswana as one of the 2 most economically competitive nations in Africa, ahead of South Africa, Mauritius, Gambia, and Tunisia. The World Bank has said that Botswana is first in Africa and 16th worldwide in political stability, in the absence of violence. It's above all the G8 nations in the absence of violence and political stability. The Heritage Foundation and the Wall Street Journal have something called an Index of Economic Freedom, and Botswana is considered to be Africa's freest economy, based on the ratings of 155 countries, 10 different categories, such as trade policy, transparency, openness, fiscal burden of government, government intervention, et cetera, et cetera. It rated as one of the freest economies, tying with Norway and Portugal as number 30 worldwide. Today in Botswana, there are 9 free years of education. And remember I said there were no government schools. There are now 300 secondary schools in Botswana. Enrollment in the last decade alone doubled from 100,000 to 206,000 students in secondary school. The University of Botswana was created in the early 70s and today has a student population of over 10,000. There are many vocational training schools and 6 technical colleges. There are over 35 Botswana people today in tertiary education and training institutions. Botswana International University of Science and Technology is being established and expected to take in its first students this year. Botswana has a literacy rate of over 85%. Today, all urban residents are within 15 kilometers of a primary care facility, as are 83% of rural residents. It has one of the best networks of clinics and hospitals in Africa. But, And here's the bad news that I think most of you are aware of. Botswana has been devastated over the years by AIDS. It has had as high as 40% AIDS rate, HIV rate in the country. And it's now believed to be about 24%. AIDS has lowered the life expectancy in the country, which had risen from 48 years at independence to 65 years in 1991. And now it's back down in the 50s, something like 56 years life expectancy. For Botswana, there has been a huge cost for treatment and prevention, for education. It's diverted funds from other priorities, and it's had an adverse effect on productivity, requiring sometimes that people had to hire two people for the same job. About 80% of the AIDS program has been funded by the government of Botswana, but it has not been alone. It's gotten support from U.S. Center for Disease Control, Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, Harvard, and Merck. Also gotten some funding from the Global Fund, Bristol-Myers, Squibb, and others. Some of you might be familiar with PEPFAR, the President's Emergency Program for AIDS Relief, which was introduced by President Bush. The PEPFAR program provided over $55 million to Botswana in provided $55 million to Botswana for prevention, treatment, and care in 2006. I mentioned that the Peace Corps has been in Africa for all these years, but it came back less than a decade ago, and it came back specifically to deal with AIDS. There are over 115,000 HIV patients who are provided with antiretroviral treatment in over 79 clinics in Botswana today. And a major step forward has been the reduction of transmission from HIV-positive mothers to children. It's gone down from 40% 10 years ago to 4% last year. The president who has just left office, President Mohai, introduced a requirement that anyone visiting a clinic or any health facility is required to be tested for HIV today, so it is no longer considered a blot on your record if you have been tested. Governance, I mentioned to you that it started and it remains a multi-party democracy. There have been elections held every 5 years, and there's now a two-term or 10-year limit. The fourth president, Festus Mohai, whom I just mentioned to you, left office in April of last year, and upon leaving office, he was awarded the Mo Ibrahim Prize for the African executive head of state or government who has demonstrated excellence in African leadership. And it comes with a small stipend of $5 million over 10 years and $200,000 for life thereafter. So it really makes it worthwhile to be a good president. Mr. Mohai's vice president, Ian Khama, became president subsequently, and Ian Khama is the son of the first president of Botswana, so I just want to point out it is not just in the United States. There have been 9 free and fair elections, and a new election will occur later this year. In 1998, the then president, Kwet Mesiri, resigned a year before his term expired to permit his vice president, that's Festus Mohai, to be president for a year and run as an incumbent. Mohai was not a career politician, but an economist trained at Oxford and Sussex, and he was therefore able to serve for a year as vice president, run as an incumbent, And I can just ask you if you would imagine whether the U.S. president would resign early to give his vice president the incumbency. Botswana has, as I mentioned, an independent judiciary, and there have been a number of cases over the years where it has ruled against the government, against the executive branch, declaring certain government actions illegal, and the government has not changed the laws as a result. They have, in fact, adhered to the decisions. The World Bank Institute rated Botswana first in Africa in political stability. I think I mentioned that. There's a vigorous, independent, and critical press. There are mass circulation Sunday newspapers, a private daily newspaper, three private radio stations, and a private TV station. There are now 1.3 mobile phones in Botswana. That's for 1.8 million people. That's pretty amazing. The Economic Commission for Africa has ranked Botswana in fourth place in Africa for its telecommunications and transport networks. So why has Botswana progressed so well? We'll cover some of that, I hope, in the question period, but I'll just try and hit on some of the highlights. It's the history of the people, their culture, their attitude, and I mentioned the Khotla, the system of democracy, the fact that they consult, they believe in adaptation and accommodation of dissent. Talked to you already about transparency. They've been very responsive as the needs have come up. They've responded to drought. Equity, they have a very strong belief in equality of the sexes. And the first person I met when I went to Botswana was the foreign minister. She was the ambassador, the high commissioner to the United Kingdom. And she was with the first appointment as a foreign representative. And she then went back home a few years later and became the foreign minister. So other reasons for their success, tolerance as a people. I know it's hard to believe that you can type people that way, but it's true, and it's really had a major effect. Their tradition of chiefs, the respect for the rule of law and dependence on political institution. They really believe in the institution, not the individual. Very important issue. They've demonstrated political leadership, vision, broad and long-term perspective. Lack of tribalism. It is primarily one tribe in Botswana. Very important issue, though there is a second tribe, and the main tribe is divided into many sub-tribes. It has led to much less conflict than in many countries in Africa. Their national development program process that I mentioned to you earlier, perhaps a major financial issue, major financial success was when they renegotiated the South African Customs Union in 1969, resulting in substantial more revenue for Botswana, which allowed them to do many things they otherwise couldn't do. Then they discovered minerals. They created a favorable partnership, as I've told you, with Debswana and many other private sector mineral companies. They withdrew in the late 70s from the RAND, from the South African RAND monetary area, and they created their own Bank of Botswana, which is like our Federal Reserve Bank. That allowed them to bank foreign exchange reserves, which has been extremely helpful. They signed an agreement with Europe in the early 70s called the Lomé Convention, which allowed beef to be imported, also very important. And they created a system of peristatals, which has allowed them to create, in conjunction with private sector, many, many businesses in Botswana which were needed but would not otherwise be within the country. So I can tell you, of course, some of the things that haven't worked, but I'll leave that for the question period, and just bring you up to date in about 2 minutes as far as what's happened in the last 6 months. Last year, diamond prices were up 20% in the early part of 2008. Production of diamonds through November exceeded that of the previous year. A new diamond trading industry, a number of different companies were created to add value to diamonds for Botswana by cutting and polishing, which had previously been done in other parts of the world. You might know, maybe not, that the United States consumes 50% of the world's diamond jewels. So, Botswana ended 2008 with diamond revenue 17% below 2007. Their expectation for 2009 is a 50% decrease in sales and a 15% decrease in prices. The company Debswana, which does the mining, has now put its employees on unpaid leave at all three mines for a minimum of 6 months, losing 1,500 jobs. The copper and nickel mines have reduced production due to lower demand from China. The banking industry is refusing to extend household credit to any mine employees. Beef consumption in the EU has declined significantly. The government in 2007-2008 had an overall surplus of $500 million. It is now expecting a deficit in its current year of almost $1 billion, which will force it to use its foreign exchange reserves, whose value has been decreasing due to the decrease in the value of the dollar. It is possible that the deficit could double to approach $2 billion. So I end on that somber but realistic note. We've taken a voyage through the history of Botswana over the last 125 years. Since independence, it's done amazingly well in its economy, its governance, and in its human development. It stands out on the continent of over 50 countries as a model, but it is, like so many countries today, in jeopardy of moving backwards, not through its own doing, but as a result of the global crisis. Thank you very much.
Our thanks to Charles Frankel for his informative presentation this evening. I am Karen Kiefer, a member of the International Relations Member-Led Forum here at the club, and your coordinator for this evening's program. While those of you line up with your questions at the microphones, there are two, one in each aisle, we'd like to remind our listening audience that this is a program with the Commonwealth Club of California, and you are listening to an African success story, Botswana, with Consul Charles Frankel. Well, I will have the first question this evening, which is some people have noted that Botswana is the place where Gods Must Be Crazy was filmed. Has that produced more tourism?
No, it may have done well for Coca-Cola, though. I don't think that it has. I think it's had some greater and more recent successes, and much of that has come from the ladies' number one detective agency, which I think all of Botswana feels is very accurate, very precise in describing the culture of Botswana. And there has recently been a video made, which may either be a movie or a TV program. It's currently released in the UK, and they're trying to decide what to do in the United States. Please, Ron.
It's in a tough neighborhood, and you said it's landlocked. Could you say something about its relationships with South Africa in particular and with what's going on in Zimbabwe right now? Because it seems to me that it could be in a jam, especially if diamonds keep going down.
uh, I appreciate the audio. Yeah, it is in a tough neighborhood. It's been in a tough neighborhood for the whole time. Obviously, at the time it was a protectorate, it was in a tough neighborhood. When I was there, when my wife and family and I were in Botswana in the 70s, there were two little problems. There was apartheid in the south with the African National Congress trying to create some change of government there. And at the same time, in the north, in Rhodesia, there was a battle going on to end the white government of Ian Smith. And it was during that period that Botswana decided in the 70s that it had to create its own defense force. So it now has a defense force. Sometimes I think that it's too much for that the expenditures are too great for the country. I think that they spend about 4% of their GDP on their defense force. And I should add that Ian Khama, the current president, was the general in charge of the army until probably 6 years ago. It has significant problems today related to Zimbabwe, refugees, significant numbers of refugees, and that has resulted both in violence and in some diseases coming into the country. As you probably know, cholera has been found in Botswana, carried by refugees from Zimbabwe. And it also results in criticizing, in condemning every violent crime, claiming that every violent crime is the result of Zimbabwean refugees. So that's not good either. The current president of Botswana has been quite outspoken against the president of Zimbabwe. But Botswana is a very small population compared to that of Zimbabwe. So when the president of Zimbabwe came back and made some charges against Botswana, the president of Botswana has quieted down. But in the Southern African Development Conference, Botswana has tried to make changes for the last decade in Zimbabwe without any success. Very little can be done while South Africa continues to support the government in Zimbabwe. It has, and it is still. Whoops. Please, Mike.
I was just very interested in what you had to say about the current economy of Zimbabwe, or the recent economy of Botswana. Here is a country increasingly dependent upon, you know, resources, mining and agriculture, and at the same time educating an enormous part of the population. The resources at some time will go. What's the future?
Yeah. They've been very conscious of that for at least 15 years and have tried a whole variety of different things. Diversification is what you're talking about. They realize that they've got a number of years and then the mines are finished. But while I say that, they've been very fortunate and they've continued to find additional minerals and, for example, more diamonds as well. They found a little gold. So that's helpful. But what they've been trying to do is to find some things that they can do in the country. And the issue has been, as I've described you earlier, they're landlocked. So they are looking at service industries, not export of goods. Having said that, They have been very fortunate to have been able to export textiles to the United States under a program that was started about 7 years ago. And so they do have a number of textile companies that are exporting. But again, they are hurting. One of them has had to close in the last few months. But beyond that, they've been trying to be a regional center for insurance, for various other financial services. They've been trying to be a distribution center where someone might distribute parts throughout southern Africa from Botswana. Botswana, as I said, has this wonderful road system. And they are increasingly getting into the one thing which is like diamonds because it has very high value and no weight, and that's called information. So they're increasingly trying to find a way in which they can get involved in IT successfully. And obviously that takes the form of data processing centers, call centers, and they're looking at a lot of other things. But they know they've got a limited amount of time. And in the last few months, they have created hubs so that there's a science and technology hub. And they hope through that to accomplish something like Stanford accomplished, try and develop a whole industry through education and through incubators and a variety of other means, trying to bring people in who have the knowledge and the interest in creating an IT industry. Sorry?
Based upon the political stability you talked about.
Right. I mean, that's it. What Botswana has to offer is political stability. It's its major trait that it can sell. It can't compete in some ways with South Africa. South Africa, I should put it a different way, Botswana's utilities and water are no cheaper. Botswana's manpower isn't any less costly. But it's political stability. They offer some tax havens that South Africa may not. They have a terrific telecommunication system. Next question, please.
Yes, like California, Botswana faces critical water supply issues. And I know there was a proposal on the table a few years ago to actually run a pipeline from the Okavango Delta down to the major communities on the east side of the country, Francistown, Soroe, down to Haboroni. Do you know where that's gone? Because obviously...
gone anywhere.
Okay.
It's one of those wonderful ideas that started in the 60s, I think. And it was an obvious thing to do. Bechtel came in and, as I recall, made a recommendation and drew up plans. To put it mildly, it raised the ire of people who were concerned with the Okavango Delta, with the ecosystem, and the result was that it has not been taken off the shelf. The result has been that as the population has increased, Botswana has built larger and larger dams and is also recycling water increasingly. But it is very much dependent on, I mentioned earlier that the flag of Botswana, which is, where did it go? There it is, which is has a blue background, is the blue sky of Botswana, it's the water, as I've mentioned to you, because the water is so important. And the currency of Botswana, which is worth, I don't know, 6 or 7 to the U.S. dollar, is called Pula. Pula means rain. It's important.
How is the status of women in Botswana? How is it developed? How does it compare to the rest of Africa?
Well, I think that Botswana, early on, especially its first president, Sir Seretse Khama, realized the importance of equality of women and did everything he could to make sure that women were appointed to and elected to major offices in the country. Women, when we lived there, were going off to school just like men were, and that continues today, so that very frequently you would find in a family, first the husband would go off for graduate education, come back, take care of the children, and then the women would go abroad and get education. But I can't think of any way in which there is an inequality except that the presidents have all been men, and I think that if you look at the legislature, it is certainly dominated by men. But at least in concept of and in the policies of the executive as well as the legislative bodies, there is great equality of sexes.
First of all, thank you very much for the presentation. I found it very intriguing. I was a Peace Corps volunteer, not in Africa, but in Central America, by an area that was really negatively affected by cattle, environmentally speaking. And I was really surprised in an area with such little water that cows are. How does that affect the environment? And is there a lot of protection of environmental resources when it comes to, you know, Okavango, and is everything national parks, and how does the cattle affect it?
Starting in the early 60s, Botswana erected a number of fences, and the fences were really to separate the cattle from the wildlife. And I mentioned to you how much of the country, 20% of the country, is game reserve. There were a lot of cries from conservationists saying you can't do that. It's restricting the paths of giraffe and elephant and so on. Well, they did it. And the result has been that the reason for it and the result has been no more hoof and mouth disease. Very, very important. So they've restricted cattle to specific areas. In Botswana, for many, many years, there were no other fences than these cordon fences. In recent years, however, they have, as we have done since we populated the West, Botswana has put in fences for cattle. And the people still have huge amounts of cattle. It has traditionally been a sign of your wealth to have many cattle. In the last 30 years, the cattle have been turned into income-producing activities. And indeed, they've had to dig deeper and deeper for the water. They've created more and more boreholes to find water. So in that regard, you know, cattle aren't great friends of the land, and there isn't much for the cattle to eat, so they have to roam vast areas. We know many people who are ministers in government, who are businessmen, who are very successful, who spend the week flying from Gaborone, Botswana, to South Africa, to London and back, and then on the weekend they'll go to their cattle posts because that's really what's important to them.
You look at Botswana, and it's so dramatically different from other diamond-producing African countries. And I was wondering if you could delve a little bit more deeply into how it happened that Botswana chose to invest in healthcare and education, et cetera, and other quality of life issues for their people rather than going the corruption and violence route?
It's a question that the Botswana asked too, and I don't think that there is an easy answer other than leadership. I think all of us who had any contact with Sir Seretse Khama really felt that he had set the pattern. And that may have been because his father had set it before him in Bechuanaland, but it's just a different tradition. And everything that he did was for the betterment of the country. You know, it's not, the country is not perfect, and I could tell you that there have obviously been cases of corruption in very prominent places, et cetera, et cetera. It's not all a fairy tale. But overall, as you say, it's done amazingly, amazingly well. We have time for just two more quick questions, if we could.
I think I'll probably be pretty quick. I actually was a Peace Corps volunteer in Botswana.
Hey, Dumela ma.
Dumela. One thing I noticed, though, was even though the statistics for the GDP are really high, I never learned a statistic about income disparity.
Nah.
You get out into the rural areas and a lot of the things that Botswana is toasted for, you know, or really commended for, maybe aren't reaching a lot of, I mean, the health services are and the education is, there's primary schools everywhere. So it's still better than a lot of countries. I was just wondering if you knew any statistics or any.
I don't have any statistics, but it is very clear that
yeah.
there has been increasing disparity over the 40-some-year history, and we regret seeing that happen. It's one of those things where the people in the city are close to power and money, and the people in the rural areas are not. And you've seen that there are a number of government programs which help the farmers out there, the cattle raisers, but not enough to close that gap. And I don't know what the gap is,
yeah.
but it's very large.
Okay.
Please, last question.
Recently in California and the U.S., there's been an interest in sustainable energy. What's the outlook in Botswana, the interest from the community, and what kind of resources do they have, whether it's solar, wind, hydropower, whatever?
I haven't seen any evidence of implementation of any sustainable energy programs. The National Development Plan, the current budget speech have parts in it which talk about moving in that direction, but I haven't seen it yet. Yes, people have, people collect water and, you know, use that water for their house. I mean, collected when it rains. And yes, people have solar panels in many cases throughout the country. But it is not yet an important issue in Botswana where it should be.
Our thanks to Consul Charles Frankel for his very interesting and informative presentation this evening. We also thank our audiences here as well as our radio audience. And now this meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California, this evening's program is adjourned.